key?
I'm not sure. Oh. He's never worked for companies for long. They always have firing him.
Yeah. Right with them. My other brother, whom I absolutely adored, became part of management for the East Asiatic and was the company boss at Tassus. Yeah, and down there, you know, they had a boating accident. He never forgot where he came from. He used to send me little notes to the reddest lady on the Sawmill Road. You know, but he was a logger, but he eventually became management. He could give hilarious descriptions of when...
I heard about that camp, Tassus. They go on strike at the, they say, the foresters go on strike. They have a long weekend.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Yes. Okay. The Prince of Denmark was one of the directors of the East Asiatic Company. And he came over once, and Otto said to me, "You should have seen the god-awful fuss we had when the Prince of Denmark came over." He said every truck had to be washed and polished, vacuumed out. And the Prince of Denmark, he said, "I just want to see an ordinary workday in the logging camp, and I want to have an ordinary workman's lunch."
Okay.
So Otto said, they washed and polished every truck, they waxed them, they vacuumed them, and then they had a tree-falling exhibition, and you know, everybody gets terribly nervous, and the faller is nervous, and the sawyers are nervous, and the tree doesn't fall, and the man standing next to my brother said, "One of these days that goddamn tree is going to fall, you know," and finally the tree falls, and then they go in for lunch, and Otto said it was to be an ordinary worker's lunch. He said, "I don't know where they got the white tablecloths from."
they had
the white tablecloths, they had flowers on the table. He said they even had the napkins folded like little ships. And
Denmark, it's surrounded by the ocean, right? So they went out.
And they had the little steaks, you know, done with surrounded by bacon and toothpicks. And he said everything was just perfect. Yes, yes.
During their coffee.
And there was wine, and he said the whole thing was perfect. The Prince of Denmark loved it so much he decided to stay over the next day, and he didn't tell the cab. And Otto said, and the next day we had leftover sour liver and all the things we ordinarily have, you know, when we have leftovers. Second day was real.
I bet the Prince of Denmark went to the closest hotel.
No, but to me it was an example. My oldest brother would never make fun of whatever happened in Mac and Blow. My youngest brother would make fun and realize where he was at and who he was and think we were putting on all these airs, you know. And this isn't really real, you know, this isn't the way it is going to, life is in a logging camp.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mother was a trade unionist. I had a couple of, I had one brother-in-law who really didn't approve of trade unions. I had another brother-in-law at the time of our strike who was a farmer and didn't know where his sympathies lay. And told me he was sympathetic to me as a trade unionist. He was anti me as a farmer, you know, because we were asking for better wages. I think everyone that was involved in the strike, Lydia, one way or another, had to answer eventually to their family.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you women to maybe start telling us about the strike. Okay? Because you were both involved in it. So, maybe...
27 years.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe I'll ask you some questions.
You bring back my scrapbook.
Yeah,
okay. I phoned a number of people today, and suddenly their memory is triggered. And they remember the friends and the enemies and the resentments. And I'm sorry that two of the women that I really wanted here aren't going to be here.
Oh, Mary was going to be here.
Mary Kelly?
Mary Kelly, yeah.
Maybe I'll try and find her while I'm in town.
Yeah.
Maybe you could go back and give us the background on the strike. Like, who was organized? Who was in the union? What workers were organized in the union?
There were five packing houses here in the Oliver area. At that time, there was the Southern, the Oliver Co-op, Haynes, BC Shippers, and McInfitts. And they were all organized. They were organized by Bill Sands, who was put on the payroll of packing house workers. And he very busily organized the plants. At that time, the labor law said that it had to be the majority of workers. They were organized in the midst of winter. If there were three men working there, and two of them agreed to sign the union, the plant was organized. So there was a lot of resentment, because a lot of people were organized unwillingly. You know, when the spring came, when the cherries started, suddenly we were having $2 union dues deducted because two of the men in the packing house had agreed that we should be organized. I think it would be very interesting for you to interview the United Packing House workers and also Bill Sands, because according to the UPWA, they paid Bill Sands to organize for them. According to Bill Sands, he saw the light and realized that he was being had, and therefore he organized them into a totally different union, and he consulted with Bill Baker, and I don't remember the other man. One was a railroader, one was a carpenter, and he made his own union. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. The United Packing House workers were very resentful of Bill Sands because they felt he was betraying them. Bill Sands felt he was justified because this was a rabid socialist outfit. You know, UPWA has always been socialistic, and therefore he felt he was justified in organizing his own union.
So did he organize a separate union when he organized the initial guys at the packing house, the three men?
No. No, no, no.
So he organized them into what union?
Into the UPWA, as far as I know at that time. He was then rewarded by Wacky Bennett in being made the Deputy Minister of Labor. And there's a beautiful letter which I haven't got, which I had at one time, when Wacky Bennett wrote him a letter and thanked him for all his liberal tendencies and for helping the Socreds get into power in 1952. That letter went to the IWA. They were going to photocopy it. I never got it back. I don't know whether they still have it, but you could consult the IWA in Kelowna and find out.
What year was the packing house organized? Do you remember?
In 1952. Okay. In 1952, I don't have the agreement. I threw a lot of things out. But in 1952, there was an agreement signed with all the packing houses in the valley. And what the act said at that time, if the majority of the packing houses and the majority of the employees, with the consent of the government, formed a union, then we could form a Poli Party certification. So the Poli Party certification came into being in 1952.
Okay, what did that mean? What was the Poli Party certification?
It meant that there was a blanket agreement covering all of us, and we were under automatic juice checkup. Now, who originated that? Right now, I can't think of the name. Everybody paid $2 union dues.
Hmm. Okay, the dues checkoff, wasn't that part of the Taft Hartley Act in the States?
No, but there was a Canadian Act. Yeah. If you get me my notebook.
You want it?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we'll come back to that. I'm kind of interested as to why he went in and organized the three guys who were like permanent workers in the packing house. Was that a strategy to try and bring the union in, or?
I would certainly give them the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly think that because basically he was liberal, because basically the UPWA was inclined to be CCF supporters, that Bill Sands, when he opted for the job, might really have believed that he could do a job in organizing, and might really have believed that the UPWA was too radical. On the other hand, the UPWA always felt they were betrayed because he accepted pay for doing what he was doing and then used it to his own benefit.
Did he think that people in the area were too, quote, conservative to join a radical union? Was that part of it?
Well, he himself was a liberal. Russ Leckie was a liberal. A great many of them that were involved in the union certainly regarded the CCF as not the right party.
Right.
But I would think that you should get his point of view.
Yeah.
You know, I might have a very biased point of view, you know, because I've been indoctrinated by the UPWA.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that unions should be political. So I might not even be fair to Bill Sands.
Right. What happened once this, like, there was the base of the union was established with these three men, right? And then who came in to work during the summer season? Was that mostly women, or?
Yes. Wouldn't you say in the summer season?
You mean one after, during the strike?
No.
Or just before?
Initial organized.
Oh, yeah, I would say.
When did you start, Lydia?
Oh, golly. I had 35 seasons then when I quit, anyway.
Wow. Long
time. Ah.
Okay.
At the year, his name went to war, Gilmore. He signed up to go to war. Now, the war broke out 38, 39, which was it?
39, yeah.
Oh, that's the year I started.
Okay, I'm interested if both of you could talk a little bit about who worked in the packing houses? Were they women from the local community? Why did they look for jobs? Maybe you could each tell your stories about why.
Well, we used to have, remember the cabins that were built there at the all of our co-op. They had cabins, and there'd be a lot of the Russian girls came from
Grand Forks
and all over. From all over they came to work. They rented these cabins by the month or so, and they worked in there, which later on they pulled the cabins down, and these girls just disappeared, and it's mostly the local people now for years that's been working in the packing houses. But years ago it was just, you know, people coming in, a lot of them.
So it was a transient labor force?
A lot of them were.
A lot at one time were.
Yeah.
Okay.